We'll go to the Prime Minister now for more on the government's proposed gun law changes. Good morning, Prime Minister.
Good morning.
Can I just start first with a clarification? The Police Minister yesterday seemed to suggest that the law change would mean you'd need to be a citizen to buy a gun. What's going on there?
Yeah, happy to clarify. The change that's been made means that you cannot purchase or you cannot access a gun licence and therefore be able to purchase a gun in New Zealand if you're a visitor. So
he was wrong.
On that question, there was questions, of course, being raised at that time around the specifics of the 15 March terrorist. Of course, the visa status of Australians are quite specific there. But yeah, happy to clarify. It's visitors won't be able to.
Okay, can you give an assurance to New Zealanders that if you set this register up, that it's not going to become ridiculously expensive?
Oh, look, I don't anticipate that. We've had, obviously, as you'd expect, with every policy we formulate, we do the analysis around how much it would cost. In the order of $50 million is the estimates that we've had. There have been overseas examples where I'm told systems have become more complex than expected, but often those are examples are in countries where you don't have either a singular police force as we do, or you're operating across multiple states, different jurisdictions. So I'm not sure that those are necessarily
referred to. Well, the example that's referred to most is Canada, isn't it? And they've had a huge blowout in cost. I mean, I think people understand and like the sentiment or the intent of a register, but what we're talking about here is whether it is just practical given the cost. And in Canada, the cost has blown out to something like $2 billion from an initial estimate of around $2 million.
So my understanding is that their registries were established in the 1990s. So obviously technology has changed over time. And also, of course, they operate across multiple different systems. Our technology obviously is better. We have a smaller population of license holders. Of course, Quebec's register, that's over 8 million people. And again, as I say, you know, there are differences in the way that federal nature of countries might operate theirs relative.
Right. And so will the system in New Zealand be solely IT-based? Will it be an online system?
Yes. So my understanding is actually New Zealand had almost a bit of a paper-based system pre-1980s.
Right, but the issue
now we're looking to an online system.
Okay, because the issue there is, I mean, we don't have a great track record when it comes to implementing large IT systems. I mean, we're talking potentially over 1.5 million guns that need to be individually registered. Again, what advice have you sought? What confidence can we have that this isn't going to blow out in terms of cost and logistics?
Yeah. And again, certainly the advice I've seen is that they have taken into account what's happened overseas. But keeping in mind, of course, we have, for instance, just managed in a very short space of time to roll out a gun buyback, something that people said would be overly burdensome and complex and difficult, and so far, so good. Look, we're not going to claim perfection on any of these issues, but I think for the amount of time that we had, a good job has been done. The register, we're giving ourselves 5 years to build this. Because, of course, what we're looking to do is to register guns as people are renewing licences and so on to try and reduce down the burden of building the register. But, of course, we do things like register cars, we register dogs. You know, we have systems in place, of course, already that others might perceive to have been complex at the beginning, but it's not a reason not to do it, and I'm confident we can.
Okay. One of the issues, too, that's come up is you're potentially increasing the cost of the licence. It'll be every 5 years instead of every 10 years. Is there a danger here that you are, again, imposing costs on a section of the community, and I'm thinking the farming sector here in particular that needs to use guns? They're also obviously complaining about electronic vehicles, the utes and things being more expensive. You've got the ETS coming on board. And obviously National is raising these concerns that the productive sector of the economy, you're adding these burdens on them in terms of cost, and that could potentially hurt New Zealand in general.
Yeah, and look, we do, of course, always mindful, particularly that we're That you're only really looking at cost recovery. You know, these should never, you know, when it comes to licenses and levies, they are intended to simply cover the cost of the system in place. Now, that's unlikely to be the case with establishing, for instance, a gun register, because that's an expensive outlay. So we accept that that's something, obviously, that we're building as a crown. But when you look at currently the cost of a firearms license, keeping in mind that, of course, we want to make sure that storage is appropriate and so on. They're things that you would expect that we're keeping an eye on because, of course, whilst the vast majority of license holders are law-abiding, they do have their guns stolen. And those then do enter into the black market. And so gun storage is an important part of the licensing regime. Now, at the moment, for a 10-year license, it's $126. And so we haven't said where that might go, but we have just flagged that relative to some of the other licenses that New Zealanders hold, it costs more to get, you know, for instance, obviously a vehicle registered or even a dog registration, that is something that we will be looking at. But we were always mindful of the cost and making sure that we are reasonable.
Is New Zealand in a climate emergency at the moment?
I think the world's in a climate emergency, and this is something I've talked with the minister about. You know, this is not just unique to New Zealand. We're in a situation where we need the entire international community to be giving this.
Sure. So, will the government actually formally declare a climate emergency, like councils?
We haven't done so to date, but there was obviously an attempt in Parliament to do so, and we were, as government parties, going to support that motion.
So you do support that.
Yeah, look, yes, but I'll be very clear here, though, and I think we do need to point this out. A declaration in Parliament in itself actually doesn't functionally change what is being done on the ground, which is why it is a declaration. It's an acknowledgement, I think, of the Parliament that we see this as an international issue that we are committed to. But ultimately, the thing that's going to make a difference is, for instance, the work we're doing on zero carbon.
Sure. Just on that,
though, around transport and so on.
Sure. But my point here is, if you're calling it a climate emergency, does that rhetoric match your actions when you're imposing one cent a litre on milk fats for farmers to pay for their emissions, given they are the largest emitters? $1,500 a farm. A small move on EVs. Critics, I guess, from Greenpeace and others, say it just doesn't simply match the rhetoric. If it's an emergency, which you've said it is, surely it demands much greater action.
And, of course, the whole point of the zero carbon bill is to bring in that independent voice who can look at our aspirations, look at the goals we're setting ourselves, and then say to us, well, this is what your carbon budgeting needs to look like to get there, so that you won't have to, you know, rely on us to say we're being ambitious enough. We'll have others who will say whether or not we're being ambitious enough in the areas we need to focus on. That's the first thing. So that's what we're trying to put through Parliament at the moment. It's a really important part of our climate infrastructure. The second, of course, is that we are entering into areas where the work hasn't been done. So we would be amongst the first to have a fully integrated emissions trading scheme or a fully integrated look across our primary productive sector with the recommendations that have come out of, again, the Climate Commission. So you might say that you don't think the dollar value is enough. Others are saying it's too much. The truth lies somewhere in the middle. But ultimately, I think the important thing here is that we have set ourselves a target of warming under 1.5 degrees. We're now looking at our transport sector when that hasn't been done to date. We're now bringing in our productive sector when that hasn't been done to date. These are firsts. But we're doing it in a way that I hope brings people with us.
Okay, Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern, thank you very much for your time.